Chapter 28. John freezes, and it's not a wash of horror that sweeps over him at Mace's words. It's entirely chagrin. "What?" Jaster says, almost falling off his chair. He rises quickly, turning towards John, but it's not betrayal on his face, not suspicion, just incredulity. "John, what on earth? Killed in action?" John doesn't shirk back into his cloak, even with 8 pairs of eyes suddenly on him. Winces, maybe a little bit, but he reaches up and tugs his hood down, letting the cloth fall away from his face as he turns with all his remaining dignity to face Mace. "A year ago, after the mission on Bastille," he asks. Mace's brows are both nearly touching his hairline, and he glances down at his Padawan. When she nods quickly, he folds his arms over his chest and says, as dry as dust, "Master Antilles. No, it was after your mission to Tamsai Prime. The Council lost contact with you in the middle of the revolt there, and when there was no word of you after 6 months, and the Jedi sent to the planet could find no trace of you, you were marked as dead." He pauses, then says with deliberate blandness, "I'm told the memorial ceremony they held for you in the gardens was very nice. Madame New cried, Deppa informed me." John winces. He'd rescued the hostages on Tamsai Prime and intended to check in, but his comm had been destroyed and the Force had shifted, drawn him onto Ferrix, and he'd followed that pull without ever looking back. In retrospect, maybe he should have paid a bit more attention to matters that weren't directly ahead of him, but it's never mattered much before, in the scheme of things. "Oh," he says, and can't quite bring himself to look over at where Jaster's stare is boring into the side of his head. "My comm was destroyed in the fight. I forgot to check in when I got a new one." "Apparently," Mace says, and there's enough weight and judgment in that one bland word to make it feel like an avalanche. John grimaces, resisting the urge to hide behind his hair, and says, with all the dignity he can muster, "I was needed elsewhere. There wasn't time to check in with anyone." "You look just like the hollow statue they put up," Deppa chimes in cheerfully. "Madame New really did cry a lot." John probably should send her flowers as an apology, or maybe a set of old books. He rubs at the bridge of his crooked nose, self-conscious, and Madame New probably knows him best of all the Coruscant Jedi. It makes sense that she would be sad to hear he was dead, and that one of her best sources for rare manuscripts was gone, too. "Hang on," Jaster says, pointed, and he steps sideways until John has no choice but to meet his eyes. The look he's wearing is still full of disbelief. "John, do you mean to tell me that you were dead in the Jedi Order's eyes all this time?" Telling him it's not the first time probably won't be helpful. John hesitates, then says carefully, "It shouldn't change things, now that they know it was a false report." "John," Jaster says evenly, holding his gaze, "I find that I don't give a damn about the politics right now. They thought you died. How severe was the fighting that they would assume such a thing?" "Fraught," Mace says, quiet. "The revolt on Tasmai Prime was one of the bloodiest I've seen in all my time as a Jedi." "I was only there to rescue the hostages the guerrilla groups had taken," John says. "The fighting was hard, but he'd saved the people he needed to, hadn't faltered. That's all that matters. That was what the Force called him to do." Jaster must read some part of that in his face, because after a second he huffs out a breath, rubbing at his forehead. "And you're a master?" he asks. "I know I referred to you as a knight in your hearing before. John, if you were always a renowned figure in the Order, why did you let such disrespect stand?" He pauses, looking from Mace to John, and then says, on the edge of disbelieving, Precisely how old are masters in general? These two, Nico says dryly from behind John, are outliers in practically every way, Mandalore, so it would be best not to base your impressions of the Order on them. Surprise flickers through Mace, and he turns, bows deeply as his Padawan does the same. Master Dyeth, he says, this is an unexpected honor. Nico scoffs, though when he reaches up to stroke his mustache, he looks pleased. Given Sislin trained you, I may even believe you mean that, he says, droll, and casts a veiled glance at John. Master Antilles, you've returned. There's emphasis on the first word of that sentence, and John doesn't quite roll his eyes, but the way Jaster's expression twists in response makes him want to. So you informed everyone else that I was grossly disrespecting my husband, but not me, Jaster asks, pointed, and John can feel the flicker of something, tangled and sharp, quickly squashed. Was this because of the circumstances of our meeting? At first, John allows, not entirely sure how to put it into words. It wasn't really an active decision not to correct Jaster, after a point. It just hadn't mattered much. But it's like, bragging. I couldn't. Both of Jaster's brows rise, sharp, and then he laughs. It's warm, and he relaxes like tension easing, steps forward. When he reaches, John doesn't even try to resist, leans into the embrace when Jaster wraps him up in his arms, presses his face into Jaster's armor. A hand strokes his hair, cups the back of his head, and Jaster says, deeply amused, "And you're deathly allergic to such things, of course. How could I forget?" John makes a quiet sound of half-hearted denial, though he doesn't feel any urge to pull away from Jaster. "You are," Jaster tells him, apparently reading his response without trouble. "I had thought you were a delicate and breakable thing in the midst of a long convalescence, too, only for you to face an entire Death Watch raiding party in your wedding finery. To say nothing of actually securing the Darksaber, my dearest." Rolling his eyes a little, John pulls back. "I killed Montross," he points out, amused more than anything. Jaster never really thought he was breakable, and they both know it. The worst he assumed was that John was scared of him, and that misconception was cleared up quickly. "And his whole squad," Jaster allows, amused, and leans in, resting their foreheads together for a moment. Breathes, eyes closed, mouth curled in a fond smile, and then strokes John's hair once more and pulls back. "Master Dyeth, I presume this was a deliberate withholding of information on your part. Given that you're not nearly as handsome as my husband, I feel I should take that as an insult." Nico snorts, though he mostly just looks amused. "I had to pry the details of John's rank out of him as well," he says. "But don't feel too much like a fool, Mandalore. As I said, both Master Windu and Master Antilles are outliers, given their ages and skills. In most cases, your assumption would have been correct. Even a Mandalorian can't be so wrong about Jedi on occasion." "What a relief," Jaster says, perfectly bland, and glances at Mace. "Have explanations been offered to your satisfaction, then, Master Windu?" Mace folds his arms over his chest, looking unimpressed, though his dark gaze lingers on John and Jaster for a long moment. "I'm glad that nothing the Council feared seems to be happening in Mandalorian space," he says, dry. "It seems as though there is a story here, however." He pauses for a moment, and then asks Jaster directly, "You plan to inform the Senate of your marriage to a Jedi?" "The message should have reached them by now, informing them that they missed my wedding," Jaster says, mild. When Mace frowns, he raises a hand to halt his next words and says, "I understand your assumptions, Master Windu, but my contention with the Senate has little to do with the Jedi Order, and what does have to do with the Jedi I offer of my own free will." Mace's frown deepens, suspicion crossing his face before it's buried. "What you offer the Jedi," he echoes. "Not simply the return of a master we'd thought dead, I assume." Jaster smiles, leonine and lazy, and sinks back into his chair like it's a throne. "Of course not. But my marriage to John has opened my eyes to the problems the Order faces, being so far from the Outer Rim and separated from the people here. You're practically myths to most of the galaxy, given how few people ever see a Jedi in their lifetimes. What good you can do is being constrained for political reasons, and it's a tragedy every time the Senate refuses to allow you to respond to a crisis. There's a long pause, and John blinks at Jaster, startled by this turn in the conversation. It's little solace that Nico looks equally surprised, his brows rising even as Mace's eyes narrow warily. When John glances at Jaster, though, he looks like he did when he first told John what he would be using the life debt for. Perfectly set, almost driven, with an edge of ruthless faith and relentless protectiveness to him. "Jaster?" he asks quietly, and Jaster takes a breath and smiles, though his gaze doesn't shift from Mace. After a long second, Mace tips his head, considering Jaster carefully, with a new edge of wariness. "The Jedi Order has existed on Coruscant for 5,000 years," he says after a moment. "Ever since the main temple on Ossus was devastated and our people had to flee, part of the condition for our occupation of the Coruscant Temple there was an agreement to work closely with the Senate, given our skills. And, like a chain pulling tight, those ties to the Senate have only grown more constrictive over the years," Jaster agrees, mild. "The Rusan reformations limited your ability to protest anything the Senate does, but I've looked over all the mandates in the law and I can find nothing that prohibits the Jedi from moving themselves, even if they cannot move the Senate." "Moving," John thinks, startled, and takes a half step back, looking at Jaster in surprise. "To the Outer Rim," he likely means, given what he said before. "But the Jedi are based on Coruscant," Mace says, perfectly even. "But they weren't always," Jaster counters. "I've heard that the Jedi came from the unknown regions and first settled in the Outer Rim, encountering the Republic as explorers from a separate culture. Tell me, Master Windu, are all Jedi satisfied with their ties to the Senate? Would some not like to find a place in the Outer Rim, where there is more space to cover, more need on planets that are only loosely settled?" Jaster remembered, John thinks, and it takes effort not to react, to shift, to swallow. Their conversation about Jedi history weeks ago, Jaster remembered, has clearly been thinking about it, has weighed it in his considerations of how to get what he wants. John didn't expect that, even with Jaster's fondness for history. It was a brief conversation, in the midst of so many other things, but Jaster's fingers slide through his, thumb stroking the back of John's hand as he slots their fingers together, and he doesn't look over, but he doesn't need to in order to show that John still has so much of his attention, even now. "The Order is much larger now than when it first began," Mace says after a moment, but he's watching Jaster closely, wary but thoughtful at the same time. "Even if we were to try and reestablish the first temple on Octo, it's far too small to accommodate even a portion of the Order, and the planet's climate is too harsh for many of our members." Jaster's smile is like a victory, and he runs his thumb over John's knuckles, then lifts his hand, kisses his knuckles lightly. "My husband is a Jedi, and I care for him most deeply, Master Windu," he says, though his eyes are on John's, gaze unwavering. "Mandalorians and Jedi have a tense history, but there is overlap in our pasts too. One of the greatest Mandalore was a Jedi, and a Jedi won the most precious of our relics in equal combat once, making himself our leader. Revan and Tare are not the only Jedi to make an impact on our people, either, and I would like to honor that, given my husband's calling." Mace is silent for a long moment, weighing that. "You want to offer the Jedi a place on Mandalore," he says finally, inflectionless. "Not on Mandalore directly," Jaster allows. "Our people are not one and the same, and there is still history that would make an enclave of Jedi settling there difficult. But I've been told by Master Fey that the Moon of Concordia is more than large enough to support however many Jedi wish to live there, and as much agriculture as they would need to keep themselves independent. The moon was strip-mined without care in search of Beskar under the last Mandalore, to the point that it's been all but abandoned, and it would ease my grief to see it transformed by people who would like to call it home." John's breath catches, entirely despite his attempts at composure. A temple on Concordia, he thinks, and it's very, very far from the Senate's corruption. Barren, right now, but the Order's Agricorps are incredibly skilled in restoring such places, for all that they're rarely allowed to help out in the wider galaxy on the scale that's needed. Within a generation, though, Concordia could flourish again, and if the Jedi are allowed to live there, to build there, the Senate's tight controls on the temple won't apply. Mandalorian space isn't technically Republic space, though it's nebulously included, and the tenets of the Reformation won't apply here. The Jedi can expand, can grow, and help, and wander as they like, without being cut off from the Republic entirely. John isn't a creature of Coruscant. He hates the planet, the press of trillions of minds, the greed and corruption that's grown up around and through the Senate, lapping over the temple in waves. And maybe not all the Jedi will want to leave, but John knows enough Jedi who would go eagerly if offered another place and build something beautiful with the opportunity. "You're offering the Jedi Tare Vizsla's birthplace," Mace says quietly, "the place where he found the heart of the Darksaber." Jaster inclines his head without pause. "His home is a home for the Jedi," he confirms. "It seems fitting." A pause, and he looks at John and smiles, squeezing his fingers. "The Darksaber is back in my possession as well. For the moment, my house will hold it, but I will cede it to my husband so that a Jedi may carry it, and when our lives are over, it will pass to the temple on Concordia to remain with Tare's other people as he wanted when he died." Still within Mandalorian space, with the Mandalorians Tare led, but given to the Jedi, following Tare's wishes, while respecting 1,000 years of the Darksaber existing in Mandalorian hands. Something in John's chest turns over, and he puts a hand on the dark hilt, feels the heady, steady hum in the blade, the note of relief that sings above everything else, and smiles. Mace can hear it too. His gaze slides to the hilt in John's sash, and after a long second he breathes out, then inclines his head to Jaster. "I am only a master," he warns. "This will need to be brought to the Council, and I have no doubt that they will want to come here and meet with you in person." A pause, and then he says, quiet, looking down at Depa, "Even so, I expect there will be many Jedi who are eager to accept your offer, Mandalore. There are too many troubles in the Outer Rim that no longer are such a threat in the Core, pirates among them. If the Order could devote more bodies to helping the Outer Rim instead of solely assisting planets whose senators have political influence, it would make the galaxy far safer." Depa leans into Mace's side, and Mace rests a hand on her shoulder, protective. He's thinking of twin girls, taken from the wreckage of a ship downed by pirates, and John can feel the wash of Depa's emotions, the softness of Mace's, and breathes out, his own tension easing a little. "I, for one," Nico says quietly, "am in full support of the idea of a temple in the Outer Rim, and I believe Dooku will agree with the idea as well. It's not something I would have expected a Mandalorian to offer, and I would want to read over any legal restrictions, but it seems a good compromise on all parts. Coruscant has become something incompatible with the Jedi Order's values." Mace grimaces, but inclines his head. "The Order has always stood to protect civilization," he says, "and part of that is cooperating with the Senate. But if we can continue our work from a more autonomous place, like the Order used to, it would benefit the galaxy and the Order as a whole." "An excellent place to start from," Jaster says, pleased, and glances up. "Arla, Jango, would you care to join us for this discussion?" The curve of Arla's smile is ruefully amused. "Finally forcing us to sit in on one of your history lectures, old man," she asks, but it's fond. She glances over at Jango, who grimaces but tips his head in a nod, and Arla huffs and looks back at Jaster. "Since we're your heirs, I guess we have to. Do I have time to shower? Talking to Tor made me feel like I got dunked in a vat of slime." A common feeling in his presence, Jaster allows, and there's something dark in his gaze that's buried a moment later. "Master Windu, I would offer you our hospitality if you would care to accept it. This isn't quite the palace in Keldabe, but I believe my people can make you feel welcome regardless. Mace inclines his head, precise. We would be honored, Mandalore, he answers. If you will allow me, I'll contact the council and explain the situation. He pauses, and he meets John's eyes, expression mild. And tell them to remove Master Antilles' name from the death rolls. Again. There's a pause, frozen, and then Jaster says, entirely disbelieving, again. John casts a vaguely hunted look out towards the press of the garden and calculates how fast he'll have to move to throw himself headlong into it without getting caught. Snake quick, Jaster grabs his hand, pulls him back around before he can take more than a step. John, he says, insistent. Again? It hasn't happened since I was a Padawan, John tells Mace, maybe a little defensive. The first time wasn't actually his fault. He and Dark Woman had gotten separated from the other Master Padawan pair they were on a mission with, then separated from each other. And John hadn't made it back for several days longer than expected, since he'd tripped over the smuggling ring they were there to deal with, and decided to take care of them before they could relocate. Dark Woman had been satisfied with his initiative, even if Master Kuhn had been less so. Indeed, Mace says blandly. You're correct, Master Antilles. This time is entirely different. John winces. Nico laughs, turning to smile at Dooku, approaching up the path. I hope you're prepared for the consequences of marrying a Jedi, Mandalore, he says, with just a touch of glee. Your hair may go prematurely gray, but I'm sure you'll wear it well. As you would know, Dooku says dryly, inclining his head to Mace and then to Jaster. You've been gray since we were Padawans, Nico, and made it your goal in life to turn everyone just as gray as you. A pause, and then he raises a brow at John. Though some Jedi seem to be following your lead, clearly. John intends to defend himself, but before he can even open his mouth, his attention is caught by the shadow moving on Dooku's heels. A Paladuvan girl, young enough that she's undoubtedly still a Padawan, with long, fire-brown hair pulled up in a high tail and oversized Jedi robes belted tight around her thin frame. There are bruises on her face, more on her skinny arms that have been largely covered by bacta patches, and she has one hand hooked into Dooku's sash like she can't physically make herself step any further away from him. She's familiar, too, and that's the most jarring part of seeing her here, with Dooku. Master Antilles, Dooku says, and comes to a halt, resting a hand on the girl's shoulder. This is Aura Singh. You are Padawan siblings, to a degree. The girl's head comes up sharply, and she stares at John with wide, startled eyes, even as her long fingers fist even more tightly in Dooku's sash. She freezes like she doesn't know whether to bristle or bolt, and John tries to swallow, but his throat is too dry. The pace of his heart is loud in his ears, a hunted, frantic thing, and it feels like relief, like guilt, to see Aura standing there instead of collapsed beside Dark Woman in the background of a calm. But it mostly just feels like fear, like dread, and there's a cold knot in the pit of John's stomach. Dark Woman is going to be angry, he thinks, and it rings in his head, tinny as if with distance. She's going to be furious that Dooku took her Padawan from her, and she's going to be furious that John told Dooku where she was, all but instructed Dooku to butt in on her training of Aura. She won't forgive John for removing a student from her care when she was that student's last chance of becoming a Jedi. If she knows that John was the cause, she'll be so angry. And she's Dark Woman. There's no way she doesn't know. Something trembles through John, an almost sick lurch of dismay, and he squeezes his eyes shut, takes a half step back before he can stop himself. All those bruises mean hard training, and John remembers what that was like. He remembers, and still, he can feel relief, even though Dark Woman only trains Padawans that way when they're disappointing enough to require it, when they're poor students like John was. John should feel regretful that a Padawan was taken away from someone like Darkwoman, who only wants to keep the Jedi Order on the right path, who devotes herself to the needs of the galaxy with a fervor that some people call madness. She's a good Jedi, she just wants to serve the Force. John knows that. But still, Aura is here with Dooku and not with Darkwoman, and some part of John can't feel anything but wretched, awful relief. John, Jaster asks, insistent, like it isn't the first time he's said John's name, and John finally manages to tear his eyes away from Aura, looks up. Jaster is out of his chair, even though John didn't register the movement, and he has hold of one of John's hands, concern on his face, something dark and angry rising behind that worry. John wants to answer, wants to reassure him, but his mouth is so dry that he couldn't manage words if he tried. And then, quiet, there's a rustle of leaves, a subtle sharp slide of Force presence that makes Aura jolt and John freeze, and footsteps on the stone, Jedi light, even as a tall figure in a dark cloak bears down on them across the clearing, ignoring the four blasters suddenly aimed in her direction, as though they're wholly inconsequential. Master Dooku, Darkwoman says, Arctic, and her blue eyes are ice, her entire demeanor as cold as Hoth in the depths of winter. Your interference in matters of training is entirely inappropriate. As a fellow master, you must see that this is unacceptable. End of chapter 28.